This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 229 of the Handgun World podcast. I am your host, and guess what, folks? This is a practical show done by a practical guy. You know, I just try to keep this kind of rooted in common sense and talk a lot about firearms and things like that. And I am back. I'm back to kind of my old attitude. As many of you know, if you followed me on Facebook, a tragedy has hit my family. A terrible tragedy has hit my family. I just found out a couple of weeks ago my wife has been diagnosed with ALS, which is also commonly called Lou Gehrig's disease. And right now, medical science has not come up with a cure for it. So there is no cure for the disease, and it is a fatal disease. And I am just really struggling with this. But you know, folks, it's a journey. It's a journey one day at a time, and we are prepared for it. I guess you can never get completely prepared for it. And as you know, you've listened to my last couple podcasts, it has been a very, very rough 2 weeks. But thank you very much for all the wonderful support from all of my listeners from both of my podcasts. You guys have been terrific, terrific supporters. And it really means a lot. Every email I get from you, every Facebook message that I get from you, the show of support, you folks telling me, you know, you've never met me, but you feel like you know me, and you grieve with me too. It's, you know, folks, I tell my wife about all this, and it warms her heart as well, and it warms my heart, and thank you very much. I will continue to do this podcast. And the reason I'm going to continue to do this podcast is because it's an escape for me. It's also a way of continuing to give. I feel the more you give, the more you get back. But you know what? I don't give to get back. I give because I want to. I give because I enjoy it. I give because I love giving. And you know, I'll never forget one time somebody said, "Please don't rob me of the joy of giving." And so I give with that kind of a heart as well. And don't rob me of the joy of giving. And I'm not going to stop giving. And so I hope that you'll think that. I just want to tell you this, folks. I want to tell you this. If you have something you need to say to a family member, say it. If you have some forgiveness that you need to extend, do it. If you need to ask for forgiveness, ask it. Tell your family you love them, hug them, do every chance you can. Make things right with people. You never know. You never know when you're going to get news like I've just recently gotten. You never know when someone is no longer going to be there, someone's going to be taken from you before you know it. So gang, you know what? Make things right. Do what you got to do. Please don't live with any regrets. I really believe my mentor taught me many years ago, we're all going to suffer one of two pains, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. Please go through the pain of discipline now so that you don't have to go through the pain of regret later. And if that discipline means facing some tough things and saying and doing some tough things and maybe swallowing a little bit of pride, if that's what it means, please do it, okay? All right, we're going to talk about guns. Let's get to firearms. Well, John Hadaway is my guest again, and we talked about some recent comments that were made on the forum about the episode 223 interview that he did with me, and also, you know, some of the voicemail questions and things that came in. John had more to say about it, and I think it's pretty educational. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you that you may not agree with everything that John and I say. That's okay. You shouldn't. As a matter of fact, if you go look at some of my iTunes reviews lately, there's some people have not been agreeing with me on iTunes. Hey, one guy thinks I'm part of the problem. Trapper Rick. Take a look at probably one of the most recent iTunes reviews from Trapper Rick. He thinks I'm part of the problem, you know, simply because I once suggested that it might not be a bad idea to store ammunition to store calibers that you might not own right now because they might come in handy for future use. Now, some people don't agree with that. Some people got on the forum and said, nah, Bob, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to waste my time. That's kind of silly. Okay, that's fine. If you think it's silly, that's okay. You know, I don't think it's silly. I don't hoard other calibers that I don't shoot. But yeah, you know, I got a few boxes of some ammunition from some that are in calibers of guns I don't own. But Trapper Rick thinks I'm a fearmonger, and he thinks that I'm part of the problem out there. He's probably in the same position right now as Haskavez and a couple of other people on iTunes that have said that they've stopped listening to me. Well, that's okay. You know what? If some of you stop listening to me because you don't like what I say, here is what I promise to all of you. I promise that you will get a full money-back refund for this free podcast. How's that? A full money-back refund. So, you know, I've had people say, oh, Bob, you're a little bit too commercial. You know, you talk about you tried to sell stuff once in a while. Yeah, you know what? I do try to sell stuff once in a while. And I spend about 10% of an entire podcast, which is usually about an hour long, 10% at the most, selling some things. So that's 90% good information. And I do not have sponsors running constant commercials on my show and things like that. So, you know what? It is what it is, and you're free to not listen if you don't want to anymore and join the small club. But anyway, speaking of iTunes reviews, if you want to rate this show, I'd appreciate a rating over at iTunes. Okay, well, so John Hadaway wanted to come back and spend some more time discussing a couple of subjects. Here's a quick break, and John will join us. John Hadaway is my guest again. Welcome back, John.
Bob, it's always a pleasure to be on your show.
I'm going to give you the award for the most frequent guest on the Handgun World podcast.
Does that make me desperate or pathetic?
You tell me.
I'll take them both.
Okay. All right. Maybe after this interview, some people might think you're both as well.
That could very well be.
Well, you and I, obviously, we talked recently about the 223 and the rifles that shoot it, namely the AR-15. And during that episode, a question came up about 80% lowers. And also, there's been some feedback on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum that you want to address. So I'll let you kick it off.
Well, Bob, let's start off with the 80% lower thing. You know, when that first came about, when I guess it was really, you know, you said, hey, what do you think about this? And and we asked that question. You know, I was kind of under the impression I knew what we were talking about. And so I've gone out and done a little research, and I just want to share with you maybe a little bit more informed opinion. And here goes. The first thing is this. I cannot see, except for a narrow band of circumstances, where the 80% receiver could possibly make sense to me. And let me describe for you why. Now, as always, your mileage may vary, your circumstances may be different, but here's the deal. I went out and I looked at these receivers that they call 80, 90, 95%, whatever number we want to put on them, and I don't want to get to the nuances of the difference, but what you've got
is... Why don't you explain to people what that is, though, first?
Yeah, and that's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
You've got a block of aluminum that is in the shape of a receiver that has the majority of the holes in the sides of it drilled and milled on the outside. The inside of the receiver, where the internals would go, the trigger, the selector, the hammer, the disconnect, the springs, is still a solid block of metal for the most part. Okay?
Okay.
The piece that the butt stock would attach to, which is the tube that the spring and the buffer ride in, may or may not be threaded. In other words, that hole may be there, but it may not be correctly threaded. It may not be fully drilled, depending on the percentage that is done on this gun, okay?
Okay.
So, in theory, you are not buying a gun. What you are buying is a piece of metal that has the potential to be a gun. Now, I'm going to step on some toes. That's sort of like the game we play of, it wasn't a baby or a child we aborted, but a fetus, and it had the potential to be life, but it really wasn't life. So what I'm telling you is let's say we have a fetus here, not a baby, okay?
Okay.
For the government purposes. Now, as a little side note, the government defines to all manufacturers when that particular gun becomes a gun and stops being a piece of metal. So, for instance, on a 1911, I know for a fact that when the machine shop machines the rails that accept the slide, regardless of whatever else is done to that blank, once those rails are machined, it becomes a gun.
You mean once the rails in the frame are machined?
Correct.
Okay, then it becomes a gun.
Then it is a gun. It may be an unserial numbered gun, but it is nonetheless a firearm. According to the ATF, what they tell me, that is when a 1911 becomes a gun. That is the moment of birth, okay?
Okay.
Now, on an AR-15, there is some discussion as to when it is birthed, okay? Now, I'm not going to go there, but let's just talk about, we are going to say, why would you want to buy this fetus of a receiver, okay?
Okay.
Now, here's what I've come to the conclusion of. Okay, so I buy this thing. Now, what do I have to get it from being the potential of a gun to really a gun? Well, the first thing I've got to do is I've got to finish milling out the aluminum that is in that block of metal so it will now properly receive the internal parts. You following me?
Well, I'm following. Uh-huh, I'm with
okay.
you.
Okay. Now, I know a little tiny bit about working with aluminum because we do make some aluminum guns. And I know that all of the cutting and all of the tools and all of the speeds are completely different than milling steel. You can't just take a drill bit and go bzzz. Otherwise, what you end up with is a galled up piece of, you know, metal around a metal bit, and it looks like all of a sudden you got a punch instead of a drill bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there is some specialized cutting talent to cut aluminum. Now, I'm not claiming I have that. I'm not claiming it's super difficult, but I'm saying it's a little bit more difficult than just a set of drill bits you got at home. Now, the next thing is you've got to cut that in such a way that it'll accept the upper receiver. So now, let's just say this. I think that most people would admit we're talking about, at the very least, a decent drill press, a specialized set of bits to fit this thing to cut out the holes we're going to cut out, and some equipment to smooth it up with, and then the thing is still not anodized.
Okay.
So let's assume, first of all, which is not the case, that this receiver is just a money-saving enterprise. Let's say it's free. By my calculations, if I were to go to Sears and buy a drill press and buy the drills and buy a vise that I could square everything up in, you know, I'm in the $400, $500 range just buying the opening price point equipment to build my first one.
Now, I'm sure that some people, though, are probably thinking, well, I've already got this stuff.
Okay, God bless you. You've already got it, okay?
Right.
Let's start off with the next thing. I can buy a receiver for an AR-15. Now, admittedly, it's the polymer one. It's not a metal one.
Mm-hmm.
For, I think, $43 is my best price I found on them. $43.
Okay.
Now, before all this started, there were receivers floating around the entire world for well under $100 that were ready to assemble a gun to.
Yeah, I remember that.
Mil-spec receivers. Now, these 85% receivers, the ones I'm looking at, are close to $200. So I'm saying, you know, one, even if I've got all the tools, there's not a lot of money savings going on here. Now, number two, once I finish with that gun, do you know what the ATF terms that as? An unserial numbered firearm. That is a legal term. That's what you have until you assign a serial number to that gun. Now, there's nothing in and of itself that's illegal at that point, provided you are building that gun in compliance with all the other things, and you are going to file the paperwork, tell them you built the gun, and you're in compliance with, I think it's 922R.
922R, and, that's correct.
Yeah, and you've made all the right parts decisions to make sure they're all American-made parts, and it's for personal use. So I guess here's what I'm saying. If you want to pay more, for a gun that's not anodized that you have to finish yourself because you have the ability to anodize. Now, that's the other thing, Bob. I don't know too many people that can anodize aluminum at home.
No, I don't either.
Okay, so go out and price what it costs to get a gun. They're going to charge you probably $50 or $100 to anodize one receiver for one customer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I'm saying. Well, say I've got all the tools. I've still got to anodize the thing, and I've still got to file the paperwork, and it didn't save any money. If I don't have the tools, I got to go and buy the tools. And remember, you can't sell these. These are for personal use.
Right.
Now, the only logical thing that I have come to, and if somebody can correct me on this and explain it, I mean, I'm searching for a good explanation, is what they want to do is basically have something that's untraceable, and maybe you live in a state that they won't let you buy one, and they want to avoid any kind of, you know, registration scheme or whatever, or the balloon goes up and then they still have the ability to, you know, make a gun. I don't know, but I have pondered this. And maybe it's because you can. And you know what? If that's the reason you're going to do it and you want to spend money on it and you're enjoying yourself, I'm not standing in your way. I'm not throwing rocks at you. But I have searched this high and low, and I can agree, yes, it's legal. You can do this. Okay?
But it doesn't sound like it's really going to save much money.
No. No, it does not. And it doesn't sound like that the, you know, in my analogy, Bob, I just don't see the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
You get.
Now, excuse me, something wrong with my throat. But I guess there are some people that that might feel that, you know, because it's untraceable and because it's something that nobody knows about, and they probably figure, well, I'm only going to use it for personal use. I'm not going to sell it, or I'm not going to gift it to anybody or anything like that. What does it hurt? And, you know, it just still sounds like a lot of work to have that.
You know, Bob, here's an interesting question I've got, and this is just an interesting question, but what prevents the people who are making these blocks of metal from just selling their customer list to anybody, and you bought one of these things from them and had it shipped to your house or had it shipped to your P.O. box or done whatever you're going to do with it, and all of a sudden the ATF knocks on the door and says, you know, and let me tell you, I know this has happened. We've changed our ruling. This is a gun. We now want to know everyone you've shipped these to. And if you don't comply, we're going to charge you with every one of them that we can prove you bought material to make. And all of a sudden, the guy scrambles all over himself to hand this out. Because now, if he doesn't correct this error, he shipped all these guns. Now they go to all these people and they say, you got to fill out a 4473, you got to do this, you got to do this, and you got to do this. And as long as you do it within this time frame, there's no crime. But once you miss this window, there's a crime. That's how they've done every gun they've ever reclassified, and everything they said wasn't a gun that they turned into a gun. So, plain and simple, Bob, you know, maybe it's untraceable, maybe it's not. But, you know, it seems like we're getting really clever here for what? You know, if you can go out and buy a gun, you know, I'm just sort of like, hey, it doesn't seem like, again, the juice is worth the squeeze here.
Yeah, what you just described seems a bit tinfoil hat-ish, but I guess you never know. I mean, something like that, I guess, could end up happening, and then you have what you thought was an untraceable gun to really a traceable gun.
You mean like what the ATF did to everybody who bought those Spaz 12 shotguns and then sent out the note and said, oh, by the way, we've reclassified this as a destructive device, and you now have X number of days to register it?
Yeah, good point. You got me on that one.
Okay. What about the ones where they sent out the deal that said, if you have the briefcase that you bought legit to fire from enclosed in the briefcase, that's now a firearm, and you have X number of days to register that as a destructive device? You mean like that?
Yeah, I guess with all the shenanigans that have been played, we can't assume anything, can we?
You mean, I got a few other examples if you want to hear them, especially some really cute ones with AKs. Ask the people at CDNN about AKs. They've still got a deal on their website talking about the ATF ruling on their Dragunovs and how it's you know, something, and you got to send it in and do something else per the ATF regulation. They're still looking for people who bought the Dragunovs.
Yeah, you got some points there, John. My thinking is, You know, we've seen that kind of stuff recently, and we see that kind of stuff now, because now the government's got quite a few resources. I think there may, and again, now maybe people might say, well, Bob, now you're starting to sound a little tinfoil hat-ish. I think there's going to come a point in time where the government's not going to have the kind of resources that you're talking about. They're not going to have the kind of time, the kind of manpower, and the kind of logistical ability to track everything all over the U.S.
No, Bob, all I'm saying is this. If all of a sudden they decide, hey, we're making a ruling that these are now guns, that they were finished too far, and they're now guns, okay?
Then it was pointless to make something that's an untraceable gun. That's correct.
What I'm saying is, you know what they're going to do? They're going to go to the machine shop that made these blanks, and they're now going to say, how many of these did you ship?
Yeah.
And they're going to say, I don't know. Well, here's the deal. You got a choice. You either help us track them all down, or you got a 10-year jail term for every one of them that went out the door for selling a firearm, A, across state lines, B, without a 4473, C, with this, you know, and they go, or you can just help us track everybody down and make sure all the paperwork's filled out and don't do it anymore, and we'll call it all good. Now, if you ran that machine shop that made those, or you ran a website that sold them, and your choice was, here's a list of everyone I've sold these to, or I'm going to jail for 10 years for everyone they can prove that I got.
Yeah.
That seems like quite a bit of leverage just to get a mailing list, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And then they're going to say, you have to cooperate by also sending out this letter to everyone saying, here you go. And that's what I'm saying. That's what they did to CNN. That's what they've done to other people. Said, we've made a ruling that it's now this, and that's that. And what I'm telling you is, this 85%, 90%, whatever, is a ruling that the government has made that says it is a gun at this point. It's born at this point, not at this point. If they change that ruling, what was not a gun before becomes a gun. I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah, pretty much at the issuance of a ruling, it changes.
And I'm saying, gee, being on the other side of that ruling, wouldn't you love to go, yeah, you know, I did buy one of these, but I goofed it up real bad in my garage, and I just crushed it, cut it in two with a hacksaw, threw it away. Really? You know, I mean, you see where I'm going with this? It's like, hey, the juice is not worth the squeeze to me. Now, if someone else wants to go, it's my right, and if you don't exercise your rights, you lose them, I agree with you. If somebody says, I'm a hobbyist, and I really get off on building my own guns, and I like doing this, and if I could build it from 50%, I would. Okay, I'm good with that too. It's your right. You should do it. Enjoy yourself. Have a good time. If someone says, you know, it just helps me to relax, and John, you smoke cigars. Okay, you know what? It's your right to do that. I'm not criticizing about it. I didn't say you're stupid for doing it. I didn't say you're an idiot. I didn't say don't do it. What I said was I can't see for me that the juice is worth the squeeze. And if someone can explain, not in point of fact, it's legal to do this, but in all the givens that we're not doing anything illegal, why would you want to pay more for an unfinished receiver than you can buy a finished one for?
I don't get it. Or put all that work into it.
Exactly.
I mean, that sounds like a lot of work to me.
Bob, if I've got all that time, dude, I'm going to be, you know, shooting instead of standing around sweating on, you know, on a drill press. I mean, but I'm not making fun of anybody here, Steve. I'm really not. I'm just simply... Did you get that one?
I got that one. Now lay off Steve now. Come on.
You mean the guy who did the cowboy IDPA video? Lay off him?
I didn't see that one.
Dude, I got to tell you, the IDPA people had people calling them, screaming at them about that video.
At Steve from the Power Factor show?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that. I'm going to have to go see that one.
It was April Fool's video.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's kind of my pitch on the 80%. I mean, I'm not saying it should be illegal. I'm not saying it is illegal. I'm just saying, for me, I don't get it. And if somebody can explain it, hey, I am willing to listen. I mean, please call in, leave Bob a voicemail, and we'll play it, and I'll go, oh, I get it now. I'm sorry I didn't see it. Or, yeah, with that said, I still don't get it. Okay? Is that fair enough, Bob?
Fair enough, but I got to say something about my friend Steve at the Power Factor show.
Okay, say something about Steve.
You know, well, I've shot with Steve and Rick. I shot at a USPSA match with these guys, and For competition shooting, it's a fantastic show. These guys know their stuff. It's very good.
It was hilarious. I love the show.
Yeah.
I'm saying it was funny. I enjoyed it. I rolled. I was just like,
I haven't seen it. I got to see it.
It was great. I'm complimenting everyone. I thought it was great fun.
I got to see it.
So Steve, I'm not digging at you. It was funny. Nicely done. Okay.
I could use a good laugh because of some things going on in my life. So I need to watch that and get a good laugh.
So here's the next thing. And by the way, I just want to say this. You know, the response that we're speaking to is from a user who commented, and I want to say I read the comments from the shows. I love people who take me to task, point out things. I mean, I think that's an opportunity to think and look and research. And you know, I'm not disputing what he said here about the legal requirements, the personal use. I mean, it looks right to me. But I'm saying, with that said, I was a little in the dark, and I'm just saying, if there's better information about why it's a great thing to do other than those limited circumstances I gave, tell me. Otherwise, I got a bunch of lowers I bought that I'm waiting to come in that are already finished and ready to assemble, which, you know, it makes sense for me. So
Fair enough. Now, the next thing you want to talk about is, and folks, what John's going to refer to is he's going to refer to the thread that I started on episode 223 when John was my guest, talking about the 223 cartridge.
You know, the first, and you know the user, his name is Imp1295. And
I know him very well. I know, as a matter of fact, he signed the post. His name is Chuck. Great guy.
Okay. And Chuck made some points. And, you know, part of what I wanted to do was, number one, Chuck took me to task. And I think that's a great thing to do. I think he was logical and he laid it out and respectful. And you know, I can read his post to you guys, but I don't think that's well served. I just want to make a couple of points. And the point that I wanted to make here was this. He says in number two, however, the comment by John regarding that if you think because you've been in the military, you have it down how to use this gun in an urban environment, you're mistaken. And he says, so words mean things to infer that a person in the military during the course of urban combat, mount training, would not have to consider the impact of random shots fired or the structure of the building that they're entering is not true. More often than not, you're clearing rooms with comrades and adjacent floors or rooms, floors above you, even outside the building. Every time we enter and clear a room, we have to be cognizant of our sectors of fire and what the possible impact of those rounds will do. Believe me, the average Afghan mud hut isn't going to stop a 5.56, tested and proven, he says. And he goes on and he talks about crossfire in the home and clearing his home and orient himself and, you know, goes through this. And he talks about a lot of things. And where I was really going with this is a couple of points. Okay, my first point is this. Current mount doctrine, as it has been explained to me by someone who teaches it, okay, in the military, one of those been there, done that, come back and teaching other people kind of guys, says this. Mount doctrine is geared for a 9-to-1 advantage over someone ensconced in a building. So in other words, mount doctrine and mount techniques are geared to have 9 soldiers for every Afghan mud hut you're going to go into with one person. Does that make sense, Bob?
Yeah, I'm following you.
Okay, so what I'm going to tell you is he talks about the random shots and being cognizant of where things are going. And what I'm saying is that just simply the techniques that mount is used for is different because it's geared to have a lot more people involved in sectors of fire. Guess what? If you're the only guy in your house with your civilians, sector of fire is important because you've got 100% of them. Mm-hmm. And clearing a house with one-on-one is almost suicide. I mean, that's as close to suicide as you're going to find.
Agreed.
Now, second thing. Let me give you the difference between mount doctrine and doctrine in a permissive environment. Okay. Let's say, for instance, Bob, and I'm just going to throw this out. Let's say, for instance, that for whatever reason, you are clearing inside, outside, upside, downside, and you're in an urban combat environment and you're using your mount doctrine. So, Bob, you spin around and you accidentally point your M4 at, say, the wife and the four kids that are sitting outside and the chickens and the pigs and the dogs and whatever else, right?
Oops.
Okay, it's oops, stay down, move on. Now, what you're going to get for that in the military, at the very worst, is somebody to say, you know, watch your muzzle. But in a civilian environment, if I swing my gun around and point it up at my neighbor and her children, what have I just committed? You've been to Mag 40. What is that called?
I'm trying to remember the exact term, what that's for. You're in some deep doo-doo.
Okay, so what I'm saying is what is oops in mount is a felony in most civilian environments. Now, here's the other thing that comes about. You know, he goes on and says, he talks about carrying extra ammunition, and he talks about, you know, the other things and dropping stuff. And you know, I don't think that he's invalid in what he's saying. What I'm saying here is that, does that mean mount training is not good for civilians and civilian environments? No, I didn't say that. What I said is that if you are going to run an M4 in a permissive civilian environment as a civilian, you need training for that. That the mount training is very much for that urban combat environment, hence the term mount. But it's not good as civilian training in a civilian permissive environment. The consequences, the chain of command, all the things are so much different. The sectors of fire, no, there is no sector of fire in civilian. It's 100% you, and you're 100% responsible for everywhere the muzzle of that gun goes. I mean, just simply put this way. Bob, how many times have you heard people say, you need a light on the gun and you need a light in your hand because you can't point that gun with the light on it to see everything you need to see because you're pointing a loaded gun at potential other civilians.
Yeah, now let me ask you about that because you're right. Yeah, and pointing a loaded gun at potential innocent civilians. Now, in most states, I think that would be brandishing.
No, no.
No?
No, pointing a loaded gun at someone is different than pulling a gun out and using it to say, I will do this or I will do that. I mean, we can debate the nuances of the law.
Okay, I stand corrected about that. I had forgotten that that's a felony. I had known that you don't do that. You just simply don't do that. I had forgotten that that was a felony.
I mean, what I'm telling you, Bob, is this. Do you know, let's put it this way. If, let's say, for instance, you say, well, you know what, by God, this is my house, and I'm going to know where everyone's at, and I'm going to go through this house with my M4, and I'm going to blah, blah. Oh, really? Okay. What if your daughter, who's a teenager, invited one of her little friends to come over and stay the night, and the wife said okay, and you didn't get the memo?
And all of a sudden, you're pointing a loaded gun.
And you know what she's going to do? You know, she's not supposed, you can't shoot her. She's a guest in your house.
That's right.
Now, what if you got this teenager who's, you know, hey, you know, he looks like an adult. He's a friend of your son. You know, he's got a beard. He, you know, scraggly. You know, he's the typical, the hormone fairy came to visit early. And, you know, he's you know, looking like he's on the street anyway because that's how they wear their pants now. You know, whatever. You going to shoot him because you didn't know he was in your house? You really think that's going to go over well?
Nope.
You think you're going to get away with that?
Nope.
So, let's be clear, even in your own house, you ain't going to shoot everybody you see who's not a member of your family because, you know, that ain't how the laws work here. But all you got to say in the mount environment is, he was throwing shots at me. He pointed the gun at me. You know, he was identified as the shooter. You know, he wouldn't put the gun down. Boom, he's done. That's a completely different standard of engagement. And I know there's different rules of engagement. The engagement cards say different things. I know all that. Don't write me notes about that. I get it. I'm using an extreme example to say you can't simply point a gun at someone you don't know in your home, much less shoot them.
Whether it's accidental or intentional, you can't do it.
Exactly.
You know, because a lot of people would try to claim, well, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to. It doesn't matter if you didn't mean to point a loaded gun at them. You still can't do it. It's still a serious crime.
Yeah. So, you know, unless you live by yourself. Okay, now, let's come up with a scenario. Okay, Bob, we live by ourselves. We have no family. We're an orphan. There's no one that's supposed to be there. We've got the only key to the place. Okay. You know, we're the Kaczynski, the Unabomber. You know, we live up in Idaho or something. Maybe in that scenario, yeah, you can search your cabin by yourself with a light and point it at everything because it's going to be Sasquatch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I'm saying the scenarios that most of us get to, so I'm saying this. Are those tactics worthless? No. You know how to handle a gun. You know how to shoot. You know how to cover a sector of fire. You've got an idea of what's going on. You know what bullets will penetrate. Just adapt it to the civilian environment with a little bit of training with someone that's squared away. You know, I mean, look, if they were going to send you to a new combat zone, they wouldn't say the mount training you had for Afghanistan is perfect, you know, for the Arctic Circle. No, they'd give you different training. You'd be on skis. You'd be in different gear. You'd have different gloves. You know, your training would be different, okay? I'm just saying, let's apply that same standard of care to say, gee, the military taught you how to do it in an urban environment. When you come back in a civilian environment, invest at least a little bit of tune-up training in that civilian environment. Guess what? Same thing for law enforcement. Great, you got trained how to do it. You got trained how to do this, but you know, in your own home as a civilian, you know, things might be a little bit different than going in a stack in a building, you know? So invest in that little bit of training. I'm not saying that the skills, one is worthless and one is golden. I'm just saying maybe we need to change the shape of that bar of gold of your training just a little bit. And the second thing is, you know, it would be pretty arrogant for me to go, well, you know what, I've taught civilians and I've taught law enforcement and I've worked with some military people. I don't need any training before I go to Afghanistan. Boy, I'd be stupid to say that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty stupid. Yeah, you're right. Well, I think, John, the main point you're trying to make, what I'm pulling from this, is pretty much the same point that Ben Branham made when he was on my show talking about this similar subject a couple of months ago, is that there is a huge difference between the military-style training, especially with a rifle, versus what a civilian needs to know to use his or her rifle. Are we pretty much on the same point there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there's big differences. Not that you can't use some military techniques and vice versa, but it's a whole different scenario.
You know, absolutely. And that was all my point was, is not that it's worthless, but just that you need to adapt those techniques to the environment that you're in, and a smart operator is always going to look to do that.
Yeah, and I think in episode 223, that's the point that you were trying to make. That's the overriding theme there. Chuck makes some very valid points in his posts, and it's well thought out, and Chuck has a military background, which I'm very well aware of. So, you know, not to discount what he put on there, it's some good stuff, but I think that we all have to realize that, you know, this is, we're not in a military environment where if and when we have to use our AR-15 to defend our home and family.
And you know, the point I was making here, and I want to be really clear for Chuck, he signed his post, he put his stuff out there. You know, first thing I want to say is, thank you for doing that. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service, yes.
And I will tell you that everything he said about the mount issues, about, you know, watching your sectors of fire, the double loadouts, all the stuff, man, he sounds really squared away to me, you know, in everything he said. And I don't disagree with anything he said in his post. I just took his post and went one step further to illustrate the point I was making, which I hope he gets, is you know, look, there are some nuances to one versus the other, and I think, you know, everything he said is correct, and I think everything he said actually translates really well to the civilian environment. It just doesn't go far enough, you know, and that's what I was really getting at there was, and I think that made, you know, I wanted to clarify that. So thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that. And again, if take me to task on this one, if you think I'm all wet, and I'll be happy to hear that too, because I, you know, enjoyed reading his post. It was one of the ones I really enjoyed reading.
Good. Thanks for making those points. Now, I have to ask you kind of a satirical question here, John.
Okay.
Given recent events that have happened, most particularly up in Boston, do you think that I think we need to start a movement, and I think that movement needs to largely be centered around the Congress needs to pass, or at least to put up a bill and pass a law banning high-capacity pressure cookers. What do you think?
You know, Bob, I've been troubled for some time about, you know, these weapons of industrial cooking being used against civilians. They have no place in a civilian kitchen.
No, they don't.
I can understand in some type, maybe if you were in a jam or jelly factory somewhere, you know, maybe Smucker's or Welch's might need something like this. But, Bob, tell me, why does the average citizen need one of these cooking devices of mass destruction? Bob, I don't get it.
Well, they don't. The average citizen, all they really need is a double-barrel blender. And all they have to do is stand out on their back porch and fire two large shots of juice from the double-barrel blender, and that's good enough. They don't need a high-capacity pressure cooker. And furthermore, I really think we need to close the cooking show loophole as well, don't you think?
Oh, Bob, I'll tell you something. The real thing is this. There's hundreds and thousands of these terrorists that get together in their homes, and they stockpile cooking utensils in a coven kind of environment where they get together and they laugh and they yuck while others suffer. They mail order this stuff without any background checks, and then they deliver it directly to their homes. Bob, we've got to put an end to these pampered chef type events that they say are fun, but really they're causing chaos and destruction on a wholesale level. And Bob, I'm going to tell you something else. I've done an informal survey of like maybe three people, and 90% of them favor common sense controls on pressure cookers and crock pots.
Yeah.
No good reason, but crock pots.
Those two, we need to put crock pots. I mean, these are weapons of mass culinary use. And the problem is that these types of weapons of mass culinary use have no business being in the hands of ordinary citizens. I think we need to tighten up the background checks for people that buy these. And also, people who buy large quantities of nails need to also have a better background check, because even though sometimes a carpenter, you know, needs a large quantity of nails, certainly a citizen does not.
Well, Bob, here's the thing. I think what we need to do is any citizen who has more than, say, 100 nails needs a hardware store permit, you know?
True.
And they need to go through the same training as the Lowe's and Home Depot and the Ace and the True Values of the world and the do-it-yourself centers. We need to get these people training and under control, because you need to know where this is at. You cannot just simply have, you know, people willy-nilly with 500 roofing tacks. Bob, who needs 500 roofing tacks if you don't have a contractor's license, honestly?
Nobody needs that. Nobody needs it. And I think that anybody that wants to buy a high-capacity pressure cooker needs to at least buy it through their local FCL. You know, their local federal cookingware license dealer. And you know, if you can't buy it through an FCL that's going to do a proper background check, then I think this, you know, we're going to have more of this kind of stuff.
Okay, Bob, and I want to tell you something. When they wrote these asinine laws about letting people have these pressure cookers, they weren't talking about pressure cookers. All we had was a cast iron Dutch oven. You know, I mean, those things were all you needed to cook when this country was founded. They did not envision these weapons of mass destruction, these crock pots that cook all day long. You know, I mean, these pressure cookers. I mean, all these people need is a good charcoal fire and a Dutch oven. I mean, honestly, Bob.
You know, I mean, I know we're going to get some flack. People are going to say, well, you shouldn't make light of such a tragic event. And we're really not making light of a tragic event. John and I are really mocking the knuckleheads that want to ban objects rather than crack down on the people who use them.
Well, I'll tell you something, Bob. Here's the first thing, and I'm going to just run through a couple of things. Okay, the first thing is this. You know, and let's just start off by putting what I consider to be the skunk on the table. You know what I was most offended by is we literally heard newscasters say, wait, give it time. This might be a right-wing conspiracy, you know, or the tinfoil hat brigade, or angry white Republicans. You know, we had, before anything, before we knew any facts, those are people, first of all, who have no empathy for the tragedy that occurred. That's my first thing. Okay, my second point here is this. You know, we have people who killed lots of people in the marathon. They killed the police officer. You know, they would have continued killing in New York City. These people were mass murderers.
Okay? Right, right.
Whatever reason they did what they did, it really is inconsequential to the fact that they killed more people with cookware than they did with guns. And you know how they got, this is the interesting part. I'm just going to put something here that should really scare the hell out of everyone. And this is one of the ones that I don't say a whole lot, but it goes like this here. They did something that I've said all along that criminals do. You know, when they needed another gun, Bob, you know what they did? They killed a cop and took his.
That's right. They did not obtain their guns in a legal manner.
So what I'm saying is once they had made the decision that they were going to break all the laws, what was killing a cop to get his gun? I mean, I'm just simply saying, let's look at it. Once we've decided to violate the norms and mores and laws of society, simply enacting a higher law is not going to stop them. And then here's the next thing. You know, okay, so now we are doing what I consider to be the let's blame everything but the people who did the crime for what they did and what they wanted to accomplish. Okay, first thing they wanted to do, they wanted to take away our freedom. Well, let's look and see if they accomplished that. Well, we locked the entire city of Boston down. We sent the police out. We searched door to door for them. We had everyone in terror. Check. Okay, now we're going to give up freedom of owning guns and public assembly and our freedom to not be surveilled. I mean, we're giving up. Check. Freedom gone. Okay, now we're going to try to divide and point fingers along racial and religious lines. Check. That freedom's going to go.
Yep.
Okay, you know, it seems like we agreed we lost and we're surrendering. I mean, to me, if you want to make those little bastards pay, we ought to rerun the marathon and make it a freedom event. And we ought to do it with open carry. And, you know, we are to agree that we're not going to live in a police state, we're not going to surrender these things, and we're not going to live in fear. But we've chosen to go the other way, and I find that appalling.
Yeah, I find that appalling, too. And, you know, a lot of scare tactics being used, obviously, and there's no question about that. But I think that, you know, this refusal, this absolute refusal to blame the people, and instead blaming the object, it's just frustrating me. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up, John, is you've probably been following this, but I'm not sure all my listeners have been following it. You know, a lot of people were kind of clapping and applauding that the Senate bill for background checks failed. They're already talking about bringing it back again and making a second run at it at the end of this year.
Bob, what are they? You know, do they believe that they didn't learn the lesson banging into the wall with their head the first time? I mean, you know, I cannot for the life of me think that, oh, gee, everyone's going to change their mind. You know, I got a news for you. Here in Arkansas, we've got Senator Pryor, and I think he got really reassured that he was from Arkansas and that if he voted for that, he was going to get to come back home and sit down.
Well, I think that some of these politicians have a suicide wish. I mean, if they bring this up again at the end of this year, 1 year away from the elections, and they think that people are not going to take that out on them at the polls, I think they're foolish.
I think the president's a sore loser and wants another bite at the apple.
But wait a minute now. 90% of the public supported it.
You know, that was one poll that had 1,000 people in it that wasn't even a national representation.
I think they found out the national representation when they took a vote on it.
You know what? They took a poll and said, do you think gun control is a significant and important issue? And 4% of the population said yes.
That was it, 4%, yeah.
Said it's an important issue that we need to be addressing.
Yeah. By the way, one more thing. I got to let you go in a few minutes. Did you see the television show America's Gun, The Rise of the AR-15?
No, I did not.
It was on CNBC, and CNBC is not necessarily a pro-gun network. But I got to tell you, I thought it was a fairly balanced show. It was about how and why the AR-15, you know, has become so popular. There were some things I didn't like. You know, the guy who hosted the whole interview, he did ask two or three times why someone needs an AR-15, and none of the people that he interviewed really took that opportunity to just hit a home run there, because I could have thought about five different answers to his question.
Well, you know, Bob, that's the whole thing. They... I don't know why anyone needs, you know, a computer and the internet access and a printer to exercise freedom of speech. I mean, you know, I don't get that. I don't, you know what I'm saying, Bob? It's like, we don't put the other rights in a need context.
Well, why does anybody need a computer with email when writing a letter would basically say the same thing?
Yeah, and the post office is bankrupt because it's run by the government. We go to what we want, which is email, because it works and you get it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I guess, Bob, I think when you see someone ask the need question, I mean, I actually will stop people when we talk about guns. Like, I don't need one. No. We don't use need with guns. You may not want one. You may not be able to afford it. You may not have room in your gun safe. But need is not a word you use with guns.
Right.
So.
Well, good. John, thanks. You know what? I got to run, but this was a very informative interview. Thank you.
Bob, thank you very much. And again, I want to just applaud the people that took the time to respond and, you know, take me to task on the things that were out there. And I've looked at them, I've read them, and I wanted to give them the respect to respond to them. And so those are people that, you know, to me, I respect people when they take me to task and put it out there, so please do so from this one, except for all the stuff that was tongue-in-cheek. We were joking, and, you know, don't send me hate mail.
That's okay. You can send me the hate mail, but as usual, I will start a thread on the forum for this episode. John, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you donating your time. You never know. You might see some legislation come about for the high-capacity pressure cookers. We really got to do something about those, because they're dangerous. They're dangerous items, and no citizen really should be allowed to own any kind of cookware like that that could possibly be dangerous and harm or maim other people. I mean, that's just not right. We need to rid the world of all devices that could be harmful. We must. Then and only then will we have peace and tranquility on Earth. That's it. It has nothing to do with evil in people's hearts. Nah, doesn't have anything to do with that. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that man is imperfect and man is broken, and that there are evil people that have evil intent. For back in 1927 or 29, I can't remember exactly which year, in Bath, Michigan, one of the worst, if not the worst, school death tragedy. A guy built a bomb in a basement of a school and detonated the bomb and killed far more people than the guy did at Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut. And I'm not trying to make light of any of these tragedies. These are awful tragedies. They're terrible. I wish they didn't happen. You know what? I'm in the Handgun World Mobile Studio right now. I'm in my little Honda. I'm headed out to a business appointment. I could get hit by a truck before I get to my next appointment. It doesn't mean we're going to ban trucks, does it? Right? I mean, a truck is a very destructive device if you want it to be. But are we going to ban them simply because they pose a danger to me while I'm doing this podcast, driving down the road, talking to you? Of course not. So, anyway, that's pretty much about all I wanted to say. You know, John had a pretty good message here, I thought. And again, as I said when I set this up, you might not agree with everything. That's okay. That's what the forum's for. That's what my voicemail is for. Call my voicemail at 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. Or use the call me button on my website at handgunworld.com. And go ahead and let me know what you think. I welcome your voicemails. I'm going to probably cover some more voicemails next week. Please remember, May 11th, Ben Branham and I are teaching an AR rifle class in San Antonio. You might want to check that out. It's one day. It's an AR rifle class. And close-range gunfighting, the Suarez International signature class. That's going to be a small group, so here's the advantage to you. The advantage is it's going to be a small group. And you're going to get a lot of personal attention from me. The class is going to move at a pretty quick pace. We're going to be able to work on some things pretty closely, one-on-one. Actually, that could benefit you greatly if you sign up for that. So just go to Close Range Gunfighting page, or just look up Close Range Gunfighting in San Antonio on the Suarez International website. That's coming up soon, May 18th and 19th. And don't forget about the additional Beyond Concealed Carry classes Ben Branham and I are teaching. Check that out. Go over to handgunworld.com. Just start clicking all the page links, and you'll see what I'm talking about. My Amazon store is on there if you want to buy Glenn Tate's books, or just do some general shopping on Amazon. You can support the show that way. Don't forget about the Shooters Club. Excellent giveaways. 250 rounds of 9mm ammo I'm giving away on June 1st. That's coming up sooner than you think. A holster or a belt from sturdybelt.com. I love sturdy belts, folks. Man, I tell you what. It's my favorite dress belt now, and it's a gun belt. Sturdybelt.com. Go to sturdybelt.com. I like it. He sent me a holster that I'm evaluating. And speaking of holsters also, Concealment Solutions, in my opinion, the very best hybrid concealment holsters on the market. Nice kydex on the outside, leather on the inside, very reasonably priced. Jason Christensen's customer service is outstanding. Yes, Jason has sent me some of his holsters complimentary. I've also paid for some of the holsters that I have, that I acquired from Jason. So he didn't just shower me with a bunch of free products so that I can talk about what he has to offer. I use Concealment Solutions and Sturdy Belt products every single day, and I very much am a huge believer in them. And by the way, if you want an all kydex outside the waistband holster, White Dog Holsters, if you can still get them, whitedogholsters.com, although I've heard a rumor that he might get out of the business, so hurry on up, get those if you can still get them, whitedogholsters.com, okay? So if you want to join the Shooters Club and you want to win a holster or a belt or 250 rounds of 9mm, or if you want to win a free ticket to any of the classes that Ben and I are doing for the remainder of 2013, well, head on over to handgunworld.com. Click the Shooters Club page. Just join the Shooters Club. It's an annual membership. We just put up a brand new video. There's probably 8 or 9 videos up there so far, and a bunch of audio podcasts, stuff you've not heard or seen on this show before. You can get signed up over there. With that said, folks, thanks very much. I'm Bob Main. This is another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight. Shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week.
I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money.